All right, I'm excited for another edition of Conversations with Community Managers. My name is Jim Storer, one of the founders of the Community Roundtable and the CR Network. And I'm here with my colleague, Shannon Abram. Hello, Shannon.
Hi, Jim. We're here today with Lori Harrison-Smith. She's the Enterprise Community Manager at Steelcase. Hi, Lori.
It's nice to meet you both. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, we're so excited to have you with us today. We'd love for you to introduce yourself to our audience to tell us a little bit about Steelcase and a little bit about the kind of community you work with.
Sure. Steelcase is a more than 100-year-old company. We turned 100 in 2012. We are the world's largest office furniture manufacturer, and we have about 11,000 employees around the globe. The community that I manage is our internal community. We call our instance Spark. It's a name we came up with to try to come across all of, regions and languages, and it took us a while to come up with it, but it's got a lot of energy to the name, and our community has a lot of energy too, so it seems to fit.
Can you tell us a little bit more? You said it's an internal community. Can you tell us a little bit more about your community, like what platform you're using and, you know,
sure.
How many employees you have on there and that sort of thing?
Yeah, we use Jive as our platform. We have a very large manufacturing base, so even though we have about 11,000 employees, we only have about 7,500 total who are registered on our platform. And it's both our social collaboration platform and it's also our intranet. So employees have to go there to get their news and their HR policies and things like that as well.
So one of the things that I've heard about your community is that you're not just trying to get folks that are in offices participating in the community, but also folks that are in warehouses that may not sit at a desk all day long. Can you tell us a little bit more about that strategy and how that has impacted your job as a community manager?
Sure. It is definitely a goal because for an overall strategy, one of the things we try to do at our company is to be one company. So it's not just split into groups like I work in U.S. and you work in France, or I work in the offices and you work in the plants. We're trying to get a culture together of everyone and pull them in as one. And it's a bit of a challenge with our workforce and our factories and our plants because obviously it's a very different kind of job. I can sit in front of a computer and work in a different way and have some free time. I can get up and go take a break and come back. I can check some social media platforms during my day. People in our plants are tied to a production line. They have goals, as most plant workers do, and they have very short breaks. So it is a bit of a challenge. We're trying to get them to see the value of a social channel in the context of business, and yet they still feel a little separated. So many of our tactics that we use are to try to make them feel included because they're also not going to spend a lot of time on Spark. They are going to go there real quick and leave after they've found what they want. They're not going to go home after work. Once they're done, they're done. They're probably going to sit in the break room and watch CNN versus checking the platform. So, you know, it's not as much of a natural thing for them, and we have to make more of an outreach to that audience.
It sounds like such an interesting challenge for you to deal with those kinds of adoption issues. Do you have advice for other community managers that might be struggling with adoption, either in this kind of split workforce or in just sort of a general trying to get employees rallied around a community?
Sure. Well, I'll address the plant divide a little bit because that has been one of our focal points. I have a member of my team, my employee communications team, who has always been dedicated to that audience. She goes out in the plants on a regular basis in our U.S. plants and interacts with the employees, gets the pulse of them, finds out what they need and what they're not getting communicated. And then she actually does more of the, what I want to call at this point, and it's not necessarily the word that I like, but more old-fashioned reporting, because that's how we traditionally did things overall with the company. We went out, we found a story, we wrote about it, we interviewed people, those kinds of things. That is still how we do a lot of what goes on in the plants, is we have people reporting. And then we elevate it to the wider employee audience, and that has helped to really get people to understand more about what it is like for those employees, and that makes them feel more connected as well. And they have tapped into some of our other things, like we have a photo of the day group, for example, and that everybody, it's a nice social, non-businessy thing where you can just kind of upload whatever, a vacation photo, a photo of your daughter, a photo of your cat, or just something fun that you've seen. There's no professional rule. It's any kind of photo. And many of our plant employees have gotten their feet wet there, like they just start out in that area. And then they've kind of, some of them have gone on to start a little blog posting, but I think more of them are going to be our lurkers. And we do our best just to make sure that we keep them informed, and we are doing surveys out in the plants to make sure that we're, you know, trying to keep an eye on what they're doing and maybe some ways that we could engage them more deeply. When it comes to the internal, the whole overall audience, I mean, I would say one of the greatest pieces of advice I wish that I'd taken for myself when we started is to make sure you train people. I mean, this is really important for our plant population, but it was really important for everyone. We were kind of told in the beginning, hey, you know, you don't get trained on Facebook, don't get trained on Twitter. You just learn it. You figure it out. But that doesn't really work, at least not in our culture. And I know a lot of other companies I've talked to as well, people who said that they found the same. So I would be sure to set out a good training platform when you get started, get people comfortable. We are right now, even though we are in year three, we are still working on some training sessions. Like during the summer, we like to do some special training, kind of reinvigorate things while it's a slower time. I also really try to remind employees when they ask, where can I find this? I didn't hear about that. I sound like a broken record sometimes, but I say, it's on Spark. It's out on Spark. And it's just a kind of a reinforcement of, hey, that's where that information is going to be. We don't have all these different tools where the news resides. We don't have all these different tools to check your HR policies. We drive them there, and hopefully we make that a habit for them. Another thing that I do is I have started sharing some of our stats. I never kept them secret for any reason except that it was helping my team to learn a bit about what was going on in the community, but now I felt it would be even more beneficial to open it up for everyone to see, and then there can maybe be a little bit of competition. We have found some of our strongest adoption has been in countries like Mexico and Romania, and France and Germany are really strong for us, but the U.S. population is actually not our strongest. So sometimes they see that out there, and maybe it makes them a little more competitive for maybe getting involved more and sharing more.
That's really interesting that the U.S., would you say, is not as engaged as some of the other countries?
Yeah, it might be, and we don't have a good data subset to check this out. It might be that more of our manufacturing people are on the platform, and they did not promote that in the other regions as much because their workforce is even more distant from the office, and they have some work to do on that culturally. So it could be that maybe more of our manufacturing people are maybe pulling those numbers down a little bit. But, a lot of the other regions, they're just a little more bought in on some levels. It's not a huge difference, but it's
right.
Enough where you can be competitive with each other a bit.
That's excellent. Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it has something to do with the fact that the folks that are in the U.S. feel, you know, maybe they're a little bit closer to the organization just because of proximity, but and they feel like they can get the information more readily through other ways, but that's interesting,
a good point.
Really fascinating. So I'm going to throw out a really, a lighter topic and wonder, what is your community superpower?
I think about that a lot. I've been to conferences before where they've asked that question, and I always say, well, I'm a helper. But I also think that my optimism is a superpower, because I think that people just, they know that I'm going to be there for them because I, along with many of our champions and support people, it's not all me by any means, but I just always try to make sure when I'm answering them that I'm doing so in a positive way. And if they're struggling with something, I'm very empathetic because obviously every tool that you use is going to have its pluses and minuses. And I know some of the minuses myself, and I can see where their frustration comes from. And I try to keep it light and happy whenever possible to try to, short circuit possibly if there's a frustration and someone's complaining, or just to make them feel supported and, hey, this isn't working for me. But generally the people coming out are simply looking for some help and advice. And then it's easy to stay optimistic when you're helping them to feel more empowered.
That's such a great superpower. I love that. Your optimism, but it also sounds like your empathy, which I think is so underrated for community managers. I always say that if you don't really like people, then you shouldn't be a community manager. Even if you're sitting at a computer all day, like deep down, you have to really like people or it's just an impossible job, I think.
It's very true. And I am an introvert and people find that to be funny because of my presence on the social platform, but it is a lot easier for me. I do like people. It's just that it's harder sometimes for me in a personal one-on-one situation, whereas I can easily jump in and just boom, help them with something or point them to something. And so it actually makes me look like I'm an extrovert, so I'm faking it.
Well, that's a superpower too, I think. So I heard around the network that you are a baking enthusiast. What is your go-to recipe that you think everyone should try at home?
Well, it's kind of funny. I've always enjoyed baking. And a couple years ago, I was starting to feel sick about a few months. And so I found out by just some trial and error that I needed to give up gluten. And gluten's in almost all my favorite baking products. So I was kind of depressed for a little while after that. But I did a little research and found some reliable people that I knew were making good and healthy foods, and I kind of got back on the bandwagon. I have, my favorite is from a site called Gluten Free Girl, and she has really, really amazing cornbread. What I try to do is find things that I know that other people would never have any idea that it was gluten-free, and I don't even mention it when I serve it to them. And if anybody would have a chance to visit, it's called the Kumquat blog, so spelled Kumquat. She has a caramel macchiato angel food cake that I just love. I mean, I like angel food cake, just flat out any flavor, but it's pretty amazing. So those are my two favorites that I can think of right now.
That sounds incredible. I am not gluten-free, but that sounds amazing.
Yeah, and honestly, you can't really tell the difference. There are certain products out there that people would definitely say you can tell, but like I said, I try to go for the ones that just have really good flavor and they're just really tasty. And anything with sugar in it, it's kind of hard not to make a good angel food cake.
I agree.
Before we wrap up, so the best pancakes I've ever had are gluten-free pancakes. There was something about them, best ever.
Wow, that's good. You have to share your recipe.
We're going to have to link up a whole bunch when we get done here.
Yeah, sounds good.
Well, Lori, thank you so much for your time today. We loved hearing about you and the unique challenges you're facing as a community manager.
Great. Thank you both.
Thank you.